The Scramble for Africa takes place at the end of the 19th century, the last quarter of the 19th century, and is an activity of the British government and also of the major, the big companies, one could say, that were set up for that purpose. The Royal Niger Company. Anyway, the various companies that were engaged in commercial activities in different parts of the continent, as well as the big banks, the Barings and others, who had their interests and their concerns in Egypt, the Suez Canal and so on. So these are activities of the rich and powerful. They're not activities of the woman in the street. But, of course, the rich and powerful also have an influence in media, church, other means of news, newspapers and so on. So they encourage, or what is encouraged, is this sort of jingoism. That, of course, is, in fact, the well-known example is that of Cecil Rhodes. Cecil Rhodes said, "I was in the East End of London yesterday and all I heard was the cry for bread." And he said, if you want to avert revolution, you have to be an imperialist. So this scrambling for Africa's resources, or scrambling for Asia's resources, was then presented as a kind of national pastime which everyone should support. Isn't it great that we are going out? And of course, there's a whole propaganda. Not necessarily that we're going out to grab the riches of the world, but we're going out with the three, we're going out to bring civilization, to Christianize, to enlighten the world. The whole idea of the so-called white man's burden, that this is done, for altruistic reasons. So on. So some people are, there's such a weight of that disinformation, as we call it today, that of course people get bound up in it. Also, as I say, the jingoism, that we're competing with the terrible French and the wicked Germans and the terrible Portuguese or whoever it might be. This is for national prestige and so on. And you'd find the same thing in France and Germany and Italy and Portugal and elsewhere. And at the time of slavery and slave trade, the same thing is going on. That the slave owners, the time we're talking about the abolitionist movement, the slave owners are presenting their propaganda. Slavery is a good thing. It's bringing people out of darkest Africa. It's civilizing them. It's, whatever they said. The Africans are... Anyway, all this nonsense that they presented. And so then the abolitionists had to present their arguments. This is rubbish. And of course, one of the big arguments of the abolitionists was that the slave owners were preventing the enslaved from the benefits of Christianity. They were forbidden to worship. They didn't get a day off to go to church. They weren't allowed to read the Bible. And in the 19th century, some of the key protagonists were actually missionaries who went to Jamaica or Demerara or Barbados and so on. They were accused of fomenting rebellions and preaching Christianity and so on. So there is, anyway, the point I was getting to was that slavery and the slave trade, because we have to remember that the trade of Britain in the 18th century was the so-called African trade, the triangular trade. That's not just the processing of sugar and rum and so on, but the production of textiles, the production of ships, the production of steel, of metal, of everything went into this trade. So it's the rich and the rich and powerful who are most into that, and although in fact in the question of slavery, it's the those who are the plantocracy, the landowners in the colonies, who got the greatest from it. So in other words, there isn't a national interest. There is the interest of this section of people who are slave owners and benefit from it. And then there's everybody else. And what we see in the abolitionist campaign is everybody else saying, well, hang on a minute, this actually, we don't, this isn't in our interest. We don't benefit from it. We don't agree with it. Some of that is because of religious conviction. Some of it is because they had alternative interests. Maybe they're connected with East Asian, East Indian sugar. Maybe they're more concerned about developing other relationships with Africa, importing other things, and slavery is getting in the way of that. Or maybe they're politically opposed to it. Or they think that the planters have got too big an influence in Parliament. They control all these rotten boroughs and all this kind of thing. So there are all kinds of things going on, all kinds of different struggles. So we can never think of what goes on in society or society as monolithic. There are different interests. Just like in Russia, there's not just the interests of the Tsar and the court and the landowners and the church, there's everybody else. So that that struggle between these different interests is essentially what history is all about in one way. So anyway, that's important to understand.